Hi, everybody. How's it going? All right. Who's been here all day? Not me. Kurt has. We're here to do a little panel with the props team from Percy Jackson Season 1. May I introduce to you Dean Gadine and Michelle Hendrickson, the props team from Percy Jackson. So guys, Michelle, how big was your team on the show? You're the first one that's going to get a question.
Yeah, this is the only answer I know. We started off with 13 people, but we had many guest appearances. So we could get up to 18 people on any given week trying to build for us.
Dean, usually in the props department, you're asked to do the impossible, create something that doesn't actually exist. What are some of the things that when you read the script, you were thinking, how are we going to pull this off? How are we going to make this happen?
I think that...
Lean right into the mic.
Lean right into it. Okay, I'll pull the mic. I think when you read Percy Jackson's script, you know that you have a responsibility to the books because the book fans love the show. And so when you look at it, we had to look at all the Greek mythology and find the tone that we wanted. So I sat down with Rick Riordan and our team to come up with the creative props. Obviously, Clayton, building Riptide was the most important prop of the show to start. And so trying to figure out what the best design was and how we were going to approach that, I think all props kind of keyed off Riptide. Everything from Riptide on, we found a rhythm, but Riptide was going to be the biggest prop to start with.
And then what kind of challenges did you have with Riptide?
The challenge was Walker wasn't in town yet, so we didn't really know which sword would fit him. So I sat with Dan Henna, who designed The Hobbit, and he was also won an Academy Award for Lord of the Rings, knew his swords. So we came up with some research on Greek swords, and we kind of picked a design we liked, then hired a wonderful concept illustrator to draw the swords out for us, and then we built three different length swords and different handles so that when Walker came to town, we could put a sword in his hand and go, that's the right length.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Michelle, just talking about research, what kind of research did you guys do in terms of Greek mythology, ancient Greece, that kind
of
stuff?
Well, first we start with the book. It was really important to know the book through and through. Not just the first book, but read all the books so you mm-hmm. know, because I actually did a lot of research from the wiki fans, like just trying to figure out what it is that they love, because it's important to get in the book so that we stayed true to the book. Mm-hmm. And then for me, I already had a background in Greek mythology, so that helped. Doing any of the artwork, doing any of the concept designs, you want to take from there and then grow on that. And then also, for me, looking at artwork prior to that period as well, mm-hmm. because art becomes art. So we incorporate a lot of those ideas in there, and as well as knowing what was going on just in the terms of our Earth, trying to incorporate those themes still.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the process? Take us through the process of a concept. You read the script, there's a prop, the concept of it. How does that become a physical item that we have on set to hand to the actors?
So this is my favorite part. I will first get a read off who's in charge. So in this case, it would be a writer was really important. So what did he want? And then what does the director want? And then we have other people who we worked with, the best producing team. We had Dan Schatz and John Steinberg, who are really into the look of a film, the feel of a film, the tone of a film, and making sure that we have the right path forward. Plus, we had an incredible production designer, Dan Hanna, who he gave us a wide berth to work with so we could build whatever we wanted, but still making sure that we're within a framework. You can't just go and build whatever you want and think it's going to fit. You want to make sure it's fitting with what everybody else is doing. So we were lucky to have kind of the advice and the guide of these people. And then from there, we come up with our own designs around that. We give it to an illustrator who was Warren Flanagan. He's probably one of the top illustrators in Canada, if not in North America. And he contributes his ideas. And from there, we get an assembly of different ideas, and then we choose them with the producers, with the director, with the writer. How are we going to build this? And that's the start of it. And then the hard part comes of actually taking a design and making it real.
Did you do like a lot of mold making, a lot of CNC, aluminum cutting? Get technical, Dean.
Okay, I'll go technical on you. So the first thing we do is we look at it and we figure out who are we going to commission to build this, whether it's our wonderful shop with Lisa and Rosie, who are sitting back there.
Oh, look, there they are.
Yeah, wave. Helm of Darkness was
they
Lisa,
are the best.
Rosie.
They are the best.
So, or we have, if we have to go CNC or mold making, we have wonderful talent in Vancouver. So we decide, Michelle and I will sit down and decide, who are we going to get to build a prototype? Because you always have to start with a prototype. And we get one back, we look at it, we think, okay, we have to change the design here, or this handle's not right. Something always has to be changed at the last minute. And then once we get the prototype approved, then we go into mass production, which in the case of Riptide, there are probably...
Mass production means three.
Yeah.
Not 3,000.
Yeah.
Four. I like four, Michelle.
Four if you're lucky.
Yeah. So we built three metal Riptides, but you can't fight with a metal sword with children. Apparently that's not allowed. I didn't know that. Yeah. So you have to use bamboo. So we made bamboo Riptides with 3D printed handles. So the three hero Riptides were all CNC metal, but then the fight swords were bamboo and 3D printed. So even Ares sword, Backbiter, all the swords in the show had metal ones made, but then we built all our fight swords based off that.
The metal swords are usually for the really fancy close-up shot, so it looks really, really sexy. And then you get into the stunt stuff, and they move so fast you can't tell the difference. It's great. What do you think the biggest challenge in the show in season one has been for you guys? Was it a particular prop or maybe a situation?
Lightning bolt.
We created the lightning bolt, and we are in competition with many different films that have done lightning bolts. And you don't, in this particular case, you can make a bolt completely out of, completely different than what you've seen, or do you want to bring it down to something that everyone recognizes? So we had that to play with. We were looking at movies like Thor had a bolt, and I can't remember all the other bolts, but I had a big wall of different bolts, and then I'm competing against those bolts. What we did with ours, we have to think of the size of our actor is Walker, and then also the size of who's playing Zeus. So that also determines how big we're going to make a bolt, and then the shape of it. And I wanted to stick to something that was definitely recognizable, but maybe came with a little bit softer curves or a little bit more organic. I was really into the actual detail on the bolt. We did come up with, right in the beginning, there was a little bit of confusion of who was deciding what that bolt would look like. And we were given, actually, a version of the bolt, and it was kind of like a curtain rod. So we had to actually convince production that we would like to try our hand at designing a bolt. And so we came up with several different types of ideas for bolt, and then it got narrowed down as we were talking about before. I think the trickiest thing was we made it out of brass, but so that the actor could hang on to it, they all of a sudden wanted us to light it up, and trying to get lights into a bolt that size was almost impossible. So we opted in the end to not do it, and we did it all by visual effects. And that, you know, as much as we'd like to put lights in everything, mm-hmm. it's not that practical.
Lights in a prop are the bane of my existence because it's batteries and it's a whole thing.
Dean can talk to lights.
Yes, there's a big joke going around with one of the producers on Percy Jackson because I did Peter Pan with him as well. So basically, if there's a light in a prop, I seem to be the guy that inherits it. And they came up to me one day and said, you know the pearls that Percy gets in the ocean? I go, yeah. They go, yeah, we'd like those to have lights in them. And we want to control them from what is known as a DMX board. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to throw electronic lights in 20 feet of water that are going to be handled by the actor, and you want to control the color temperature. So again, our wonderful shop, Lisa and Rosie, Wave, built some great pearls, and then we had another shop, Unlimited Design, that specialized in electronics, build a light system that had me with a fishing pole at the top of the tank that Walker was underwater with these pearls. And so going to the lightning bolt and the swords, we were helping ILM with lighting. We did build some rubber or some very clear, opaque lightning bolts that had blue lights in them for various VFX shots. And all of Walker's swords, for any sort of contact battle, we had to build LED lights in them for tracking. So it was a challenge, especially when they're sword fighting with lights. There were many days where we were like, oh, well, that part of the lights are broke now. So, yeah, lighting is fun.
The stunt team never goes easy on the props either, so they've got to be built to last. What was the biggest feeling of accomplishment in the show?
The lightning bolt.
Yeah?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful, like, it's dynamic looking.
Yeah,
though, Ares Shield. Ares Shield, sculpted by Lisa back there, it's really cool. Like, we had another illustrator, Brian Cuttingham, who's also fantastic. He kind of came up with the concept. We went back and forth about trying to get, we didn't know what to mount on the front of it, and then we ended up with the animal motif, and instead of putting it into the shield, having it come out of the shield, which Lisa managed to make. It's actually an incredible sculpt because most people would think you have to build it out, but she built it so flat to the surface, it was incredible. It's great.
I think that all the swords that we built as well, because we had to be very unique with the swords. Backbiter was very specific, and Ares sword was extremely specific as well. And the talented builders that we had behind them, and I saw a guy sit down back there in a Canada hat, this Pete Charon. So if you want to know about Ares sword or Backbiter, go corner him, because he, once we got the design done and did the CNC metal swords, Peter built all the fight swords for us, and he sculpted the handles because the handles were so intricate that we couldn't run them through a computerized machine. They had to actually be hand sculpted, and then we 3D printed and then made casts of them for the fight. So a lot of details, a lot of levels of work go into every prop.
Swords, shields, lightning bolts. This is all things that I would imagine Disney would want to market as toys. So was there a lot of discussion about that kind of at the start of the show?
No. I think it's a misconception that they're doing the show for the marketing. Yeah. Actually, not at all. They were so invested in the film and so invested in the story. Eventually they said, what can we do here to, you know, but I think it's more they're trying to be loyal to the fans. It kind of came out of the excitement of the film. So, no, there isn't this weird kind of group of people going around saying, let's make things before the movie. It's definitely the movie before the toys.
What would be your choice of the prop that you would like to see in the toy store?
Well, I had suggested the beads. So Rosie back there, she built and painted a million beads. I thought it would be fun for most people to be able to create their own beads and maybe do packaging, you know, of like build your own beads, make your own, you know, I thought that would be fun and they might do it, you know, and then of course there's the bolt, there's the swords, there's the Percy pen, which, you know, doesn't look like much,
yep,
but it's so important and it's so integral to the script. And also I think it is the symbolic of the entire show that the book itself starts off with telling Percy that this pen can do mighty things, basically. And it's just a simple pen. And Rick Riordan was very, very dedicated to saying, do not make this pen some sort of dramatic build. It had to be simple because it is a simple. So,
what was the pen in reality? Between the three of us and these fine people out here.
Well, Rick Riordan didn't want this grand pen, but Dan Hanna and I thought that it should be a grand pen because we hadn't talked to Rick yet. So we commissioned Warren to design all these pens for us, which were like, I gotta tell you, they were the most stylized pens you'll ever see. And then when Rick came in and he saw our drawings, he goes, it really should just be like a Bic pen. And we were both like looking at each other, Dan and I, like, oh, really? Because we kind of missed the boat on the pen. So because in film, you can't just go buy something off the shelf and put it on camera if it's an iconic prop. The pen, that Bic pen was actually completely manufactured. Oh. We 3D printed the tubes that the pen is in. The pen cap, the one thing that I went to Rick and said, I have an idea for the clip. And he said, what's that? I said, let's make the clip the sword blade shape with gold. So even though it's not featured in the show, you don't really see it. When Percy has that pen, the actual clip is the sword blade shape. It's Riptide. So that was the one thing that we threw out. But we get through like 3 days and people started treating it like a Bic pen and be like, hey, we're getting short on pens. I'm like, you had 12, where'd they go? Well, you know, so they realized suddenly that you couldn't just go buy a pen at Walmart, that they were being made. So suddenly they took better care of the pens.
Yeah, because, yeah, where do those Bic pens go anyway? I saw in the first episode, it just looks like a black pen with a chewed tip.
Exactly.
Something that maybe came off your desk. Yeah. But no, it's a full build. Amazing. Working with other departments can be tricky. Props does a lot of crossover with costumes department, special effects, stunts, etc. What were some of those big challenges for you guys?
The armor? Yeah, there's the kids' armor. We had to work closely with costumes. We have to make sure that all our pieces fit with the costume. We always have to really follow costume lead. Like they will kind of come up with an idea of what things they want it to look like, and then we have to follow suit, make sure it fits, make sure it doesn't get in the way of their actors or anything they're doing. And it usually costs us 3 times as much as we want it to cost because of costumes. But they're good people.
And working with Set Deck at Camp Half-Blood, we work with them closely on setting up the weapons training area because they'll put up the targets and whatnot, but we're in charge of all the bows and all the spears and all the wooden swords and everything that they train with. So we work with Hamish Purdy, who's a wonderful decorator on the show, and he and I worked out, you know, how much extra stuff do I need to build for you for dressing so that you have the materials to work with. And so we always worked hand in glove with those guys as well. Percy Jackson crew was probably one of the most meshed together teams that I'd worked with on a show. There was no drama at all. And that can happen on a show where sometimes you might not be syncing up with somebody else's idea or vision, but everybody was on the same page on that show. And we all wanted to do a good job for the fans. We knew that everybody had been waiting for the show to be made. So we really wanted to do a good job. Plus, once you meet the Riordans or Riordans, you really want to do a good job for them too, because they're wonderful people.
Nice. I'm going to start thinking about questions you might want to ask these fine folks, but I wanted to ask you, were there any major disasters in the show? Did anything break? Any big You probably don't want to admit
it. Lighting is really difficult. So, you know, they'll be like, can you light it in the middle? Can you light it on the sides? Can we put it underwater? And the problem with lighting is we need a power source, and often whatever we're putting it into, there's not enough room to put the power source, or your power source doesn't have enough strength to last very long. So that is a huge challenge on set, because nobody waits for the prop. However, we're the last people to go in and serve the set. So it's a very challenge if you're on set.
I think the thing that happened to me was in the Ares fight. The very first start of the Ares fight with Ares' sword, we put, I can't remember what they're called, but we put these little teeth on the sword that were about this far up the blade from the handle. And bamboo is very forgiving. It will take a beating and not break. But after take one, they looked at me and said, oh, we broke one of the things off. And then, like, after take three, they broke another sword. And I was standing there going, oh, my goodness, we got to do this for 2 days, and we have, like, 12 swords left. But luckily, I think we broke two more after that over the 2 days of fighting. But I kind of looked at that little part, and I thought, whatever swords we build for season two, I am not putting those on.
Yeah. Very good. there's a question from local props master Ben Krakowski. What kind of weird things did you find in your pockets and bags after an end of the day of shooting?
I'm not on set, so I don't find too many weird things. I just lose things.
I'll take it to a general thing, not the show. I'm going to talk just props. Because I kind of got the gist of Ben's question. I thought, how could I answer that? And I thought, I'll just talk about jackets. Because when you work in film, you have about, if you've worked as long as I have, you have about 57 jackets. And so you never wear the same jacket very often. And I was on a film on top of a mountain at 11,000 feet, and I was wearing a Snow Goose parka. And I reached in the pocket, and I pulled out what are called sides, which are mini scripts and tell you stuff. And I'm looking at it. The sides were from 20 years ago. I hadn't worn that jacket for 20 years. It was from a movie called The Edge with Anthony Hopkins. And I'm standing there, and then I reached in my other pocket and pulled out a granola bar, which I'm pretty sure was not safe to eat. So that's kind of the weirdest thing that I pulled out of my pockets in my career.
One time I found Nick Nolte's dentures. That's a true story. Does anybody have any questions for the props team? Why don't you come up here and use my microphone, because we're actually recording this for a podcast as well. Just tell me your name and ask your question.
My name's Hannah. Did any of the actors take any of the props?
We gave Walker pretty much everything. He has one of everything. Leah, who plays Annabeth, she has her dagger. She has her. She has a shield.
She has two shields.
Oh, right. And she has necklaces. You know, we gave them whatever they wanted, because they perhaps are some of the finest kids that we've ever worked with. They were really professional. They were a joy every day, those guys. And they worked hard, really hard. So, you know, and they loved coming into the prop shop. It was their place to play. Especially when you have to do studying all day long in between the scenes.
Our prop office, our main room at the stage, was by the schoolroom. So whenever they would be given really tricky assignments, they would sneak into our office and either head to the candy section or the blue candies or go play with the swords. And then the teacher would come in and go, okay, guys, you got to get back to class. You got to get back to class. So they spent a lot of time playing in our space.
Hold on. Tell me more about this candy section.
Candy?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the blue candies that Percy's mom would give him to calm down, we had basically found every blue candy you could possibly find in North America. And then we had to do, of course, the store in episode two. Is it episode two where Annabeth sees gumballs
episode
and all that stuff?
Episode three.
So we had boxes and boxes of candy in our lockup, and they discovered it. So they were in there a lot. I'm sorry for their dental bills, I'm sure.
Does anyone else have a question? Come on up.
Hello, Hello again, my name's Emma. I was wondering if there's anything you built for the show that you are particularly proud of but didn't get to have featured or wasn't featured very often.
Oh, great question. Yeah. I don't think you get to... has everyone seen the whole series? So do you see the helmet that's on the beach? That is an incredible prop. It is gorgeous. It's beautiful. Also built by the lovelies back here.
Lisa,
and
she's over there now.
Honestly, it is a phenomenal prop, and I wish they had spent more time showing it and the importance of it.
Yeah, I concur. The Helm of Darkness, the amount of energy that went into that, the thought, the sculpt, because it was all completely sculpted. And then to see, unfortunately, in screen time, we have no control over how long something's going to be on a screen. That was the one that I wished would have had more time just because the effort that went into it and the, how it turned out.
That was a great question. I think you had a question. Yeah, come on up.
My name is Emily, and from what research I've done, I know there's not quite a direct answer to this, but how does one get into prop making for film, TV, theater, like any of that?
Okay, so there's different ways to get into props, but what I would be most curious of somebody is if you want to get in, you should just be passionate. Passionate not just about film, but passionate about everything, anything. The biggest problem we have is some people want to treat it like a job. It's not a job. It is fun. It's so much fun. But you need to love every part of it. Building a license plate is not that fun, but it is cool when you learn every single license plate in the world. You know, it's if you enjoy, and I can honestly say, learn how to build things. You don't have to be great at it, but just learn how to put something together. Learn how to make things. And it could be anything. You could take a plumbing course. You could take an electrical course. Whatever. You can build cars, but that will give you an idea of how to be creative without... You don't have to be the best artist necessarily, but you have to want to love it. So that's...
And I'll add to that. So obviously you asked that question, so it means you probably have some artistic interest in things. So as you're going now, just take photos of everything you do, save it, so that when you get out of school and you want to go forward, you have a little portfolio put together of things that you've done, things that you've made, and then find out who the prop makers are in Vancouver and seek them out, seek their guidance, seek their counsel. And if you feel like you need to go to Emily Carr or any of those types of schools, then you should pursue that as well. Because what you'll learn there is you'll learn the foundation of art and you'll learn how to layer it up as you go. But building a portfolio, nothing is wrong to put in a portfolio. You'll edit it as you get older. But for now, just take a picture of everything, save everything.
And I think what's cool about props is that it takes all of the artistic disciplines and rolls them all up to it, like sculpting, painting, drawing. We do paper. We work in all the mediums. So I think it's really cool.
I think everything is an art form. It really is. And you should, everything you see people doing, you should consider that there's some fascination. There's something that's going on there. So be interesting. To be interesting is to learn.
Any other questions? Here she comes.
Hi, my name is Hannah. This question isn't really about props, it's more about sets. When Percy gets pushed into the lake, it looks a lot like Cultus Lake. Was it Cultus?
No, it was up in Squamish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Oh, come on up.
So cute. Hi, thank you. Hi, my name is Jenna. Nice to meet you all. I'm actually currently a theater production and design student. Props is actually one of the things I'm really interested in and hoping to specialize in. And I was just wondering, because I know you kind of answered that question already with a similar question, but getting into kind of like film props or like the industry itself after kind of training through a program and having a portfolio ready to go, is it still very difficult to break in, or is it a very long process? like, do you have to kind of take, like, internship roles, like, little by little, smaller jobs, or is it kind of a little, like, open market, a little bit not too difficult to get work? Sorry, I don't know if that...
I think there's so many ways to get into film. Unfortunately, when we started, to be honest, a lot of it we did for free. I don't even know if you can do that anymore, but we come from a background of the magic of film was probably the more the allure. None of us knew really what that meant. Now our union is so big, you do need some skills to get in. What you're doing is exactly what you need to do, and you just probably have to start off doing independent.
Yeah, and to follow up what Michelle said about independence is, you know, there's the Independent Film Society, and you see film groups are looking for somebody for 2 or 3 days to help them on a film. And I think that's an entry. I remember 3 years into my career, I'd already done big shows, but one of my funnest projects I did for free, which was a video for a Canadian band, The Tragically Hip, because I wanted to work with them. And you, when you're in the moment, you're not thinking about, I'm not getting paid or anything. But I think from an entry level, if you have a group of friends that might be involved in film, like you stay as a collective, sometimes you'll move as a group forward. Like somebody will go, oh, I got this show, you want to come and help? We're trying to work on some things within the union about opening it up for more training and stuff, because there will be a massive brain drain in our industry, because a lot of us, I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm not exactly young. So,
Dean, come on now.
So there will be a bit of a brain drain. We do have to get some more people involved for sure. So keep going.
We're really keen for new people, like people who want to do the job, really, not just don't know what they're doing, but like come with some skills and come with some interest.
I haven't had a job for 38 years. I've been paid to play with the coolest things for 38 years, and that's the best way I can say it. People keep asking me when I'm going to retire. I'm going, well, I'm still having fun. I don't know what that word means, because I haven't got a job. I've been playing for 38 years. So that's what you're good.
Yeah. Any other questions? Come on up.
Nobody has to run. Nobody has to run.
Hi, my name's Rebecca. I just wanted to ask you, what is your favorite project that you've done, like, over the course of your career? Or do you even have one? It might be tough.
There's so many. I think one of my favorites, I was doing Night at the Museum, and I built, or I should say I participated in building the Einstein bobblehead. I'm a very big into science. So I was keen. We hired this wonderful cartoonist who did a 360, and it sounds so easy to make a bobblehead, but there wasn't even bobbleheads back then, really. Like, they were very rare. And so he designed that. We had somebody else sculpt it. Somebody else had to paint it. And I had to find all these people, but it was just being part of that process. And I loved the build in the end.
Well, Percy was special, there's no doubt. I think a series of unfortunate events with that cast a few years ago for Netflix was my favorite, because I had no business being on that show, I thought, when they hired me. I thought, I don't do these types of shows. I don't do fantasy. Anybody who looks me up on IMDb, I come from cowboy movies, World War I, historical. So when I went into a series of unfortunate events, it was with a whole new mindset about building worlds and creating worlds, which made Peter Pan and Wendy shortly after, and then Percy Jackson feel natural to me. But I don't think I would have ended up on Percy Jackson had I not done a series of unfortunate events. That was kind of one of those special shows.
Any other questions? Do you have a question? No. Oh.
Hey, I'm Meredith Garston. I'm another props person. I was wondering, are you guys both part of the Props Masters Guild?
I'm currently not. I'm a mom. I don't have enough time.
I am. We have a new guild in Los Angeles and coming into Canada called the Property Masters Guild. Basically, what we wanted to do was tell people about what we do in our craft, because a lot of people don't realize how much props does on a show. And so anything that an actor handles, from weapons to food, newspapers, eyeglasses, books, if they move it and touch it, we are in charge of it. So if you watch a great action scene and you watch this great fight, well, everything they're fighting with in their hands, we've provided. So we work with stunts and special effects closely. There's really no department that we don't work with. So the Property Masters Guild was formed right around the Rust tragedy, where the young cinematographer lost her life. And basically, we needed producers and production managers to really respect our craft more, because it, in some cases, it can become a safety issue if we're not given the right tools to do our job. And that, so that's how that was formed.
And on that note, make sure you check out our booth, which is just back there. Kurt is there running it. He'll point you over to it. There's really cool stuff on display there from Queen's Gambit, Resident Alien, Oppenheimer. Pretty cool stuff. I wanted to ask you, Michelle and Dean, and maybe you're not allowed to answer this, but are there whispers of season 2 for Percy Jackson?
You're allowed to say?
Yeah.
Yes.
What are some of the things that you're hoping? I know, Michelle, because you said you researched the books.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any things in the material looking forward that you're really excited to get your hands on?
Well, we have to build Poseidon's...
trident?
Yes.
Yes.
And so the reason it didn't get built in the first one was because there was a little bit of a budget constraint by then. And then I think the idea... What happens is sometimes everyone has an idea, and there's a lot of people who come out with ideas that you've never even heard of. They're like, oh, who's this person? And they're like, you know, it should be made out of this. Because I do understand there's a lot of people who have like maybe thought about this all their life, of what this is supposed to look like. But in the end, there's almost like too many cooks in the kitchen. So that was kind of what was happening with the Trident. There was just not enough time and not enough of a budget to kind of really figure out what that should look like. And nobody wants to make a bad prop. So I actually, for once, rejoice that we did not have to make it for that scene at the very end. It wouldn't have been what it should be. And what was great about Disney is they recognize that, and they're like, yeah, let's not do it until season 2. So,
looking forward to seeing it. Dean, do you have anything that you're excited about? Or maybe something to return to?
Well, I know that we're going to have to build a new sword, a new Riptide, because Walker's grown probably a foot since we've last seen him. And so we always knew when we gave all the Riptides away, the real ones, we knew that this season there would be new Riptides, because we would have to adjust to the size of Walker. So I'm looking forward to getting those going again, and then looking at the various challenges of the props. I'm more of a wait for the script and go, oh, okay, we got to build that. Because sometimes you'll read it in the book, you think you have to build it, then you get the script and it's not in there. So we really do have to react to the script first.
Was there a lot of deviation between the books and the series?
So I worked on one of the movies, and this Percy Jackson was really much more true to the books. I mean, unfortunately, it's really hard to get everything into a movie, and sometimes the budget also doesn't work for it. But I really believe that we were better this time and more accurate.
I thought of a good story, because it kind of makes me smile whenever I think of Michelle. Michelle came onto the show, and she was a bit delayed because she was in Spain working with Jennifer Lopez. And so when she arrived, we were right in the middle of trying to create the Minotaur game for episode 1. And so luckily Michelle, who has a 16-year-old son, is very familiar with Pokemon and all these different games. So I just kind of said, hey, Michelle, could you get with Rick and figure this game out? And it kind of went into it, or James, the director, James Bobbin, and kind of carried on from there. So Michelle, you want to elaborate how the notebook and everything evolved from your mind? Because
Well, I tried with The Notebook. I tried to hire somebody that was the same age as the kids. That didn't go very well because, unfortunately, kids get nervous. They think they're supposed to make something spectacular, and I just really wanted them to draw what they could draw. So then I turned it over to some of our illustrators. We went through it. The wonderful Lisa, Rosie helped me draw some things, and then it came. But the thing is with illustrators, they're a little too good. They don't know how to do things poorly. And so it was turned back to me, and so I took everyone's design and made a really bad mess of it all and brought it down to an 11-year-old, 10-year-old's drawings. So it was actually a lot of fun. But then when we got to the Myth and Magic cards, I knew a lot about Pokemon, and I knew a lot about the other card games because my son played them all growing up. And so I knew how a card should be made and how the pictures should be drawn and the magic that should be on it. And so it was just so much fun to get to do that. I felt like it was second nature for me because, my son has every single card ever of all those games. So, yeah, it was great.
And then, of course, when the book, we did have the game people come through. We had all the different divisions of Disney come through to look at, oh, this is the toy division, this is marketing, this is that. And they got to the Myth and Magic, and they were trying to figure out what the rules were for the game, and they're asking Michelle about the rules of the game, which was a fictitious game. So it just kind of carried on from there. It was fun to watch.
Do you think we will see that game in the toy store eventually, Michelle, with your name on it?
I said they have to pay me a lot of money because that is not easy to create. I think it could be a great game, but we'll see.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up, but I want to thank everyone for coming out and listening to us, and I want to thank Dean Gadine and Michelle Hendrickson for braving being in front of the audience instead of behind the camera as they usually are. Thank you so much, everybody. Percy Jackson Season 1 on Disney+.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day.
Thank you, everybody.